Wing TV, where the revolution is being televised, with your hosts, Victor Thorne and Lisa Giuliani.
Hello, it's Monday, May 31st, Memorial Day 2004, and you're watching Wing TV. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. As you can tell, we have some new opening music and also a new set that has been designed for us by our webmaster out in Los Angeles. So we'd like to say thank you to him. He's basically one of the most fantastic and creative people we've known, and without him, Wing TV wouldn't be on the air, so thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Also, we'd like to extend our appreciation and thanks, and also our deepest debt of gratitude to the military veterans of the past, present, and future. I know America has been taking quite a drubbing in the last few months here, but in the press and the world forum, but right here at Wing TV, we still love America, we still love the troops, and we still love the form of government that we have in this country. The problem is right now that it's being taken over and usurped by some outside influences that aren't working in our best interest. So, if we want to save this nation, we have to pull together as Americans. And we can no longer let the press and the politicians pull us apart.
Right. We are very thrilled to have Michael Elliott of 911review.org with us today, and today begins our week-long series on 9/11, so I hope you can catch it and stay with us. Hi, Michael. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be with your show.
Anyone who's seen Michael's site, it's 911review.org, knows that it's one of the finest sites out there on the Internet. So why don't you start off, Michael, and tell us a little bit about your site and what you're trying to accomplish there.
Well, thank you. 9/11 Review was set up about a year ago by a group of academics and former academics, mainly living in Canada. My background's in physics, and physics is what showed me that the Ali bin Laden and the 20 hijackers fairy tale just doesn't stand up to scrutiny.
Physics seems to be one of the primary keys to this, because I know in my book 9/11 Exposed, I brought quite a bit of physics into it, and it doesn't add up, does it?
It just doesn't add up. And not only does it not add up, none of it adds up. Usually when you tackle a hard problem in science, you try and find the weakest link, and you go at the weakest link, and when you crack that, you crack the chain. But on 9/11, nothing stands up. None of the links stand up. In fact, some of them aren't even there. You blow on them, and they're just dust that disintegrates before your eyes. This whole fantasy about the hijackers, in actual fact, seven of them are still alive,
mm-hmm.
and eight died before 9/11.
Unbelievable.
And in many of the cases, they either trained with, trained at U.S. military facilities. It's known that Muhammad Atta was at the Defense Language Institute in Monterey.
Michael, if you could just speak up a little bit. I'm sure you're doing fine, but just a little bit to make sure. There you go. Perfect.
Three of the hijackers had as their addresses on their driver's licenses Pensacola Naval Air Station in Florida, if you can believe that. And when you look at it, the whole story just sort of disintegrates. When we started concentrating on the physics, the key to 9/11, at least from the research we have done, is the Pentagon attack.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you go to our site and click on the link that says Pentagon attack, you'll see a glorious color photo there taken by a photographer by the name of Daryl Donnelly. And the photograph was picked up in all the news agencies. SEPA Press was the people who put it out. And it clearly shows, and this was taken probably 2 minutes after the impact, that there's no debris. There's 110 tons of airplane missing.
As a matter of fact, the DOD and the Pentagon legend, as you call it, states that the whole plane and everything was consumed by this fire, which would be the first time in aviation history that it had would ever have happened.
You're absolutely right, Lisa, and that's on the official Defense Department website. This is their story. And by coincidence, if you believe in coincidences, two foam-fighting fire trucks from Reagan Airport just happened to be in the area and were two of the first units to respond on the scene. And so what happened was they were fighting the fire with foam, which is what you would expect for an airplane crash, only there was no airplane fuel to fight. And in the meantime, what happened was the whole Pentagon facade, the face of the Pentagon, was covered in this firefighting foam, so we could see exactly from the early pictures what parts of the Pentagon are damaged.
Uh-huh.
And in the early photos, it's clear that the only hole in the side of the Pentagon is about 3 yards wide.
Right.
According to the military, a 757 with, I think, a 43-yard wingspan folded back its wings and disappeared in a 3-yard wide hole.
So as we all know, what the size of that hole is more fit to or more accustomed to, right?
Sorry?
The size of that hole, we know what exactly that would be more accustomed to rather than a big jumbo jet.
Right. And apart from the fact that there's no debris outside, apart from the fact that the fireball that you see in that picture is way too hot for a kerosene fire. In physics, you can look at the color temperature of a fire and estimate the temperature of the fire inside there. And we estimate 2,000 to 3,000 degrees centigrade, which is what the civilian firefighter said was the temperature of the fire, which is way above what you get with kerosene. But apart from all that, when you look at the damage that was done to the Pentagon, there is a straight line of damage blown through from that impact point that runs 86 yards straight through three rings of the Pentagon and punches a hole out the other side. Now, there are not many buildings in the world that are built as strongly and as stoutly as the Pentagon. It's legendary. Those are poured concrete walls.
Plus, though, there's a guy named Master Sergeant Noel Sepulveda who said that he saw the plane sticking out of the Pentagon, yet, as you said, it went through three different cores. So how can they have it both ways?
Well, we've got, if you look on our site, there's been an excellent review of all of the so-called witness testimony.
Uh-huh.
Personally, until that testimony is sworn, under penalty of both perjury and treason, because an attack on the Pentagon was treason.
Right.
Then I really don't pay much attention to the witness testimony, but you'll find an excellent review on our site by Gerard Holmgren that runs 50 pages where he goes through every one of the so-called witnesses who pretend that they saw a plane, pretend that they saw a Boeing.
Mm. The Dulles Air Controllers also thought that what they were seeing on the radar, and they were the ones that cleared Flight 77 for takeoff, they thought they were seeing a fighter jet on their radar. Is that correct?
And that's absolutely crucial. This is O'Brien at the Dulles Aircraft, the radar tower, and she's unequivocal. She says there was a consensus of all the radar operators there that the thing that came in and did hit the Pentagon was too small and too fast to be a Boeing. And when you think about it, a Boeing is actually just a big cargo plane. It's a big lumbering. You can't turn a Boeing on a dime.
Right, it's a tank.
And this thing came in from 7,000 feet, dropped down to the ground in under 2 minutes in a tight circle. And all the aircraft controllers say it couldn't possibly have been a Boeing.
Plus, there's nothing on the lawn in front of the Pentagon, so it's still pristine and untouched.
Including two missing 7-ton engines.
Right.
That are about 20 feet in diameter, that are on detachable bolts on a big aircraft like a Boeing. They mount the engines underneath, but they literally intend them to drop off in the worst case. Because if the bolts shear and the engine drops off, you can still fly a plane with wings. If the bolts don't shear and the wings drop off, you're in deep trouble.
Yeah. Well, we have a lot to cover here, Michael, so...
I wanted to ask you, Michael, the NTSB is notorious for arriving on the scene quickly whenever we have a plane crash. How have their actions or non-action regarding 9/11 been inconsistent with their previous behavior when we have crashes?
That's a great question. You know that the head of the NTSB, just by coincidence, who just happens to be put in just before 9/11 as head of the NTSB, just happened to have been the investigator that investigated the Wellstone crash? If you believe in coincidences, and her resume on the National Transportation and Safety Board site makes explicit that she started her career in Washington. Washington with the CIA. Now, the NTSB, under law, is required to hold investigations into each of the four supposed crashes. They've held none. And U.S. law is very, very clear. The National Transportation Safety Board has priority over every other agency of the U.S. government in the event of a crash. That means they have priority over the FBI. And yet, none of the data recorders have been released. And only part of one of the voice recorder transcripts have been released. And there has been no investigation yet.
And our mainstream media isn't bringing any of these points up.
The mainstream media is, I think, at this point, a total write-off.
Right.
They are so used to covering these things up. There was no serious investigation. I mean, look at the so-called, what I call the Kissinger King Commission in Washington now. They didn't even bother appointing a Supreme Court justice this time. Here you've had 3,000 people murdered, what's clearly an act of treason at the Pentagon. The anthrax attack, where five people died and targeted the two senators that were opposing the Patriot Act, Daschle and Lee. That anthrax has been gene sequenced to be originating from U.S. military bioweapons labs or their contractors. So the anthrax attacks on the Capitol after 9/11 were an act of treason, too.
Right. You talk on your site about two videos that the FBI is withholding, one from a Citgo gas station, the other from the Sheraton Hotel. Would you like to get into that?
There's actually a third one from the Virginia Department of Transport. It's not the, it's really quite amazing police work on behalf of the FBI on the Citgo gas station, which overlooks the Pentagon from the other side of the interstate. The FBI were there to collect the tape
within minutes,
5 minutes of impact.
Yeah.
Now that's very good police work, don't you think?
Amazing. But has anyone since tried to get a hold of any of these people at the gas station or the hotel and question them? Any independent researcher?
Well, what's amazing to me is this, what I will call the lily-livered left, the so-called opposition, has not demanded these under Freedom of Information
right.
Act.
Yeah. Well, let's switch gears a second, Michael, and let's talk about the World Trade Center as a controlled demolition.
World Trade Center are to the Twin Towers were, of course, two of the most sturdy towers ever built. In fact, the three buildings, the Twin Towers and the Pentagon, are probably, they're just at the top of the list in the history of mankind for the strength of the buildings. The Twin Towers were designed to take a 707 hit. I think what's especially interesting is the second one, partly because we have better video footage of the second one. And also on the second one, it's almost a glancing shot. It catches a corner. It clearly does not go through to the central core.
And most of the fuel splashes outside of the building.
And it's a huge fireball. It's just the normal kerosene billowing black-edged fireball. So very little fuel got in, but even if it did, kerosene cannot melt steel.
Right.
Especially in 47 minutes. So the idea that the planes had anything to do with the subsequent demolition of the buildings is totally far-fetched.
Right.
It's absolutely absurd. If you think you can melt steel with kerosene, run down to the steel companies, they'll make you a billionaire tomorrow.
We've, in the very few minutes that we've been talking about this here, we've now pretty much included the FBI, the NTSB, the media in some form of complicity regarding 9/11. Why don't you add to that Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld's part?
Well, I think before we get to Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld, where we'll sort of get to sooner or later, you've got to add the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
These don't think for a minute that these guys are protecting you from terrorism. And on our site, there's a page called the Springman Interview, and I recommend that you invite Michael Springman to come on your show. Michael Springman was the head of the visa section of the U.S. Embassy in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. And he kept turning down these visas from totally unqualified applicants. And whenever he did, another guy in the office would come over and say, well, you got to pass it. And he said, no, they're not qualified. I said, too bad, pass it. And would appeal it up to the ambassador, which would overrule him. And this happened time and time and time again. When he came back from his tour of duty in Jeddah, he started investigating and writing up. He left the Foreign Service and realized that this was the CIA operation running out of Jeddah to bring unqualified but Arabic patsies into the country. Now, under Freedom of Information Act, the National Review, and we link to this on our site, has the visas applications for the pilot or the supposed pilot of the plane that didn't crash into the Pentagon. And they're just absolutely ridiculous. The guy just doesn't even bother filling out half of it. They're red flagged left, right, and center.
But it was still red stamped and pushed through, huh?
And it was pushed through with no problem. So I think you got to add the CIA in there,
right,
too.
Yeah, Rumsfeld was actually in his situation room. He was in his office rather than in the situation room when it happened.
I think probably Cheney's more interesting, because the president was not in the White House on 9/11, but Cheney was. And do you know who stayed the night before with him? Bush Sr.
Right.
Stayed at the White House on the 10th of September.
And wasn't he going to a Carlisle meeting, I think?
They had a Carlisle meeting during the event the next day in Washington. So I think that would be a really good place to look, because in the chain of command in the United States system, the head of the military can only do so many things, and at some point has to appeal to the White House.
Michael, there seems to be a lot of coincidences, doesn't there?
Well, also, the big coincidence in my mind is both of the people responsible for the Air Force stand down, Air Force General Richard Myers at the time, and head of NORAD Eberhardt, were both promoted for their performance on 9/11.
Right. Isn't that incredible?
Isn't that amazing? And there's not a whimper in the media.
Right.
In fact, Myers had his confirmation hearings 2 days later, or 3 days later, and his confirmation hearings before the Senate are just a farce.
Yeah. I started my book, 9/11 Exposed, basically by saying that if you use the mainstream media as any indicator, it almost seemed as if 9/11 hasn't happened now.
Yeah.
It's so much pushed into the background that it's like it didn't even happen.
Well, they've already pushed Afghanistan right off the map.
Mm-hmm.
And the only difference between Afghanistan before the invasion and now is that the poppy production is back up to what it should have been.
Exactly.
Or those nasty Taliban banned the production of opium.
Uh-huh.
And I think at this point we've now got to realize that if we don't if the media or if the American public does not take this into their hands and do something, they're going to keep hitting us again.
Right. Well, with that in mind, what do you see now in the future? I know there's some talk about somehow maybe blaming the next attack, which we all think is imminent, on the internet somehow. What are your views on that?
Well, what's happening is, in the first year of our work on 9/11 review, we went through meticulously all the facts, all the photographs. We'd go through 7,000 photographs at a time, the entire collections, and work on the physics and show what really happened. But after a while, we started deconstructing the media story of 9/11. And the media story of 9/11 is just an utter farce that keeps changing around. If you want to see an excellent essay on this, take a look at Truth, Lies, and Legend on our site, which is about a 50 or 60 page detailed review of how they kept saying, well, this guy's the paymaster and that guy's the paymaster, and switching it back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And around Christmas time, I'd say the dozen researchers or so of 9/11 review, about half of them another thread that is strongly reflected in the legislation that's being pushed through Canada, United States, and Britain, which is a bioterrorism attack. And of course, some people would say that there's no reason there's only one. It may be both. And we're seeing these threads get built up. And knowing that in the wings are the executive orders that FEMA has already promulgated for martial law on the simple signature on the president that cannot be reviewed by Congress for a period of 6 months, we're wondering if they're getting ready for martial law. They can't win an election. And the next one may make 9/11 look like a picnic.
You know, there have never been any independent inquiries into this 9/11 massacre. And the 9/11 Whitewash Commission is, of course, a joke because it is anything but independent, despite the protests and repeated attempts by the families of victims of 9/11. What would you describe, how would you describe the American public's non-reaction to a series of events that don't add up and the lack of investigation following this massacre?
Is it just that they don't have the information like we're presenting right now? Is that the major problem?
No, I don't think that's the problem at all. I think it's very hard to wake up people who are pretending to be asleep. And I think part of the problem is that if you walked into the diner in Crawford, Texas, and you asked them, should we respect international law and pay international prices and have gas at $6 a gallon, or should we invade Iraq, get our hands on the oil and keep the gas prices down? I think the invasion would be given the clear upper hand in a vote.
Well, they're not doing very good at keeping the prices down, though.
And what they haven't figured out is that it doesn't keep the price down.
Right.
One, it lets them get their hands on the oil to control it. And the price spiked up after the first war, and it spiked up after this one. And two, the other thing they don't really understand is that the 100 or 200 billion that this war is funneling into people like Cheney's old company is actually going to come out of their pockets sooner or later. It's all because the fundamental problem, I think, is that you have an outlawed deficit financing.
Right.
If Bush had to go before the American public and say, I want to invade Iraq, and here are all my lies, why? And, oh, it's going to add another $1,000 per person to the national debt, which is already at $20,000 per person, I think they'd turn him down.
Have a different, yeah. Well, how do you think, before we leave, we have to get going here, how do you think that people like you and us and John Kaminsky and others are going to fit in to this picture if another attack happens?
After the next attack, which I'm expecting on or before the 4th of July, I think that there's going to be a tremendous crackdown on people such as you, such as myself. And if you remember, on the day before 9/11, they shut down about 500, the FBI shut down about 500 Muslim websites.
Yeah, they did.
So I would recommend anybody who has woken up and is a part of this sort of new resistance to take their websites, make sure they're backed up, start looking into alternative communications, shortwave, some of the encrypted communications on the Internet, PGP, Entropy, Freenet, things like that. And between now and the 4th of July, make sure the hatches are battened down, because if the direction keeps going, if in essence they decide that Al-Qaeda, A-L-C-I-A-D-U-H, is going to strike again, I think they're very well placed for really coming in with martial law.
Well, that's some very shocking information, if or before July 4th. So, Michael, you've been fascinating. I wish we had another 2 hours.
I'd like to mention again, Michael Elliott's site is 911review.org, and we strongly urge you to read up on this information. It's chilling at best.
All right. Michael, thank you very much for appearing today, and we'll certainly have you back on again.
Great pleasure.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you for the work you're doing with Wing and Independent News.
Well, keep up the good work. We'll talk soon. Sure. And we'll be back again tomorrow on Wing TV with our special guest, John Kaminsky, author of The Day America Died. Keep your eyes open, America, and enjoy your Memorial Day and think of the people who gave their lives for this country.
Take it easy.